welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who blew out his ACL and MCL while watching Scott Adkins do his super spinny kick in Undisputed 17. Boyka's back in prison again. How's it going, John Levengood?
The best thing about what you just said is that I apparently own 16 or 17 Scott Adkins movies. That sounds like a win.
So how do you blow out your ACL and MCL just by watching a movie? And you're on the you're on the couch.
In all seriousness, this is something that I do and my cousin does as well. Sometimes when we watch action movies and we get really, really into it, we'll actually get really excited and start leaning back in our reclining movie seats and kicking our feet at the screen as if we were Van Damme or Scott Adkins kicking away bad guys. It's not a joke. Like, this is actually just some weird, goofy movie-watching twitch that I have. So, I mean, when Scott Adkins is on, and I'm excited about the maneuvers I'm seeing on screen, I very well might pop something.
Well, no, not very well. You did.
Sorry, I did. I did, actually, while watching Part 17 of Undisputed, where I don't know, it's like Jingle All the Way, where he's fighting people on Black Friday, but it's in Detroit, so the competition is rough.
Boyka just keeps going to prison. You know, after the first one, you're like, maybe he's framed. After the second one, well, the warden hates him. But now he's just a criminal.
Like, yeah, so, but he's a criminal with a good heart in 4.
See, I got over that at Part 12.
which one was that? When he was in an office building?
Yeah, when he stabbed the old woman and went, it was her fault.
Man, that old lady, I don't know, he's Eastern European. Maybe it was a mean Eastern European woman, like, who killed people. I don't, like, from a Taken movie.
And then in 14, he stabbed a really nice Canadian woman. There's no excuse for that.
Was 14 where he fought Liam Neeson from Taken?
No, he's the one that took Liam Neeson's daughter, and he went to prison instead of getting killed by Liam Neeson.
Then he had it. Did Liam Neeson pop out his ACL?
No, his are gone already. They're all steel.
He's like a T-800 under there.
That's how he runs all night.
That's also how he throat chops, and he never, like, has joint problems in his fingers after all the throat chops.
It's all metal.
You do enough throat chops, like, don't get me wrong, it can be lethal, but you are going to have some knobby-looking knuckles from the arthritis in the long run.
That's how he killed the wolf in The Gray, is you just need him with his bionic knees.
And then he jammed those knobby knuckles in its neck.
Yeah, didn't he break a bunch of whiskey bottles? Or like?
Liquor? Yeah, the little one-shot sample bottles that you get, yeah, and then he, like, taped around his hand like it was Van Damme in the Kickboxer with the ancient way, except with whiskey bottles.
Were they empty when he did it, or did he waste alcohol?
Like, I hope he didn't just pour it out. Like, if he really didn't drink that, or I mean, if there was alcohol in that, I hope he drank it.
Yeah. If I was like, I was a survivalist and I was with him and I was also an alcoholic and I saw him do that, I would be furious. I would help the wolf.
So, mentioning The Gray, by the way, wasn't that like a 2011 movie? That was a ways back, right?
Oh yeah.
So and even then, Movies, Films, and Flicks was already like a year old.
Yeah.
And it's almost 2018 now.
I mean, we've been around for a while.
Yeah, and this is like we're probably coming into the, I don't know, 2.5 or 3 years of the podcast.
Yeah.
And
our third.
Our listeners might have wondered, like, what our release rate was. We had a bit of a hiatus. Yeah. Mark is our brand new editor because Lazavath is going pro with improv acting, so we'll have to heckle him when he's back in the future.
Yeah, so since I'm like the Zoolander of computers, it took me a little while to figure out how to edit and record these things.
Editing software is in the computer?
I was just walking around screaming at it. Hey, computer, fix it. Well, in honor of Lazavath, I think we have some listener questions.
You think correctly. You think correctly. But now, you know, it's like there's only two of us, so you don't get to play dumb as to who has the questions today. All right. Our first question comes from Filmphonic, who it's a website, filmphonic.com, and the Twitter account is Filmphonic. They're pretty supportive of us, and they provided all our questions today. First question is, Assuming you've seen Dunkirk, can you remember a war film that was as unrelentingly tense and gripping throughout, or indeed any film? Now, I have not seen this movie yet. I've only heard huge rave reviews from Mark.
Okay, then I'll give a very long answer.
Okay, very long answer.
All right, so the short answer is no.
What about, wait, can I, so we both saw Hacksaw Ridge.
No, because no? I get what you're saying, and the battle, the scenes and like that are, but that's more cinematic. Okay. That's more, what Nolan did with this film is he wanted to be experiential, so he said it was like a fight or flight test. And it's unrelenting in its engagement and doesn't let the audience off the hook. You're invited in to experience it as they were experiencing it. Like, as in, like, with not enough time to think or process things. So okay. I immediately thought, you know, the beginning of Save It, Private Ryan.
Right, that popped in my head, but what you just said.
But that's only kinda basically, like, the beginning. And then you move more towards the traditional narrative. I mean, you love the characters, and I would say it's every bit as tense and gripping because you actually love all the characters. But in Dunkirk, it's more cold because you're not really getting to know any of the backstories. There's no monologues about, you know, Giovanni Ribisi talking about his parents. There's no any of that. It's just these people thrown into the action and them surviving. So it's just following them. The closest thing that I could think about is Paul Greengrass did Bloody Sunday, which I think is my favorite movie of this century, and United 93, where he's like a fly in the wall watching these situations unfold. You aren't really getting – you're getting the now with Paul Greengrass movies, with United 93 and Bloody Sunday. So those are about the only two films I could feel are about as gripping and tense. And the only other movie I could think of was Insidious 2. Because when I walked out of the theater, Megan and I walked out of the theater, my wife, and I walked out of the theater really stressed out. Like, I was like, I was a wreck.
Like, what kind? Wait, when you say that you were stressed out, do you mean it's like you were exhausted from being tense during the movie? Or like you were still actively anxious about what you saw? Like that, no, like that dude was coming for you.
No, no, there's no nightmares or anything like that. It's just basically you're strapped to like a roller coaster. And people are scaring you around. Like, it's like you're going through a really scary haunted house on a roller coaster. I was going to say a roller scooter. I don't know what a roller scooter is. I know what a razor scooter is, and I know what roller blades are. You know what? If I was going through a haunted house on roller blades, it's probably the worst thing. I can't rollerblade. That's the
thing. You accidentally scare the people who are supposed to jump up and get you, though, because they don't hear you coming as well or see it through their little peepholes?
I mean, I would do that thing where you start running really fast trying to keep your balance. And so I'd probably fall backwards and kick one of the poor ghoulies in the face.
Those poor guys. Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah.
And if I was running through there, I'd be worried that I'd accidentally plow one of those guys over when they jump out in front of me.
Well, you would. you would see Leatherface go, ah! Dunkirk is easily in my top five of the year so far. I'm kind of still processing. I know for sure that it's going to be – well, I don't know for sure, but Baby Driver, Lost City of Z, Dunkirk, Ghost Story, and I don't know what my five is yet. I've seen a lot. You know that. But Dunkirk, it's just the way they filmed it. You're just in it. It's now. It's like a 4D ride. I don't know. This is going to sound weird. I loved every second of it, but I don't know if I was ever really tense and fearing, like had dread. Maybe that says like what I am, fight or flight. But I mean, it was just, there's not going to be other movies like it because it's just Nolan has this very interesting kind of cold. But
do you think that this will be emulated for its style, for its intense style?
I think it's too hard.
Yeah.
I mean, my brain died there. Dunkirk shut me down. I think it was very successful. I think, but for someone to emulate this, it couldn't be done on this scale unless it's by like a Spielberg or a Nolan or, you know, Denis Villeneuve. This film was so hard to make. And so structured and so, you know, they shot on like, they put like IMAX cameras on airplanes. So On a smaller scale, yes, but I don't think they'll be able to recreate what Nolan did on this. So there's a chance, and I mean, if something's successful, there always is something that follows it up, but I don't think this could be replicated. So I think this is one of the – I've never had an experience like this. I could only say similar experiences, but there wasn't one that was like, yeah, this is the exact same thing. It's not like I drive a red F-150 2015. I jump into a blue F-150 2015. You know, same different color, same car. So, I don't think so, man. I think it stands on its own, and that's, you know, part of why Nolan's so great.
He really is, isn't he? With, like, his Batman Begins, his Inception, his the Prestige. Whoa. I don't know if anyone isn't gaga over any of those movies, but I love them all.
All right, so you know that scene in The Dark Knight when they are going after Gary Oldman in that truck in the tunnel? And Joker has, like, the bazooka and, you know, do you remember that?
I know you're talking about, yeah.
Like, I don't know if this makes sense, but that action scene, I mean, I think it's technically beautiful. But I also – there's like a coldness to it for some – just the way how crisp it is. So just imagine that for 2 hours with Dunkirk, except with like a dude sticking his head out a window with his tongue out.
That's – I got nothing. I'm clearly going to have to see – I feel a bit remiss that I did not go see this in theaters despite a lot of recommendations. This was a low theatrical attendance year in general for me though. I did just see Justice League a few days ago, and it's – December 5th, so I'm way behind the curve.
Yeah, welcome back, by the way.
I know, right? It's like, okay, world, I'm ready to look on social media and hear your opinions about Justice League now, 2 weeks later. I mean, I was late to everything, man. I saw Thor Ragnarok 2 weeks late. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know. Well, I've got more from Filmphonic.
We just answered a question.
One question.
That's our second question that I've answered. And 107 episodes, three questions. I mean, like 300.
Oh, we really gave an answer. We've had
episodes where we have all questions. So we've had probably like 300 plus listener questions.
That's fair.
And I've answered two.
Two. Oh, gosh. Now, I usually give answers, but my answers tend to be ridiculous.
Yeah, see, I've always given answers, but
deliberate.
But they're never right.
But deliberate.
Yeah.
All right. Filmphonic, their second question they ask, and it's a long one. What are your thoughts on mocap performances like Andy Serkis in the Planet of the Apes films and their legitimacy when it comes to awards season? And on that note, do you think a stunt performance category at the Oscars is long overdue considering all the other categories? I mean, is the physical work in Crouching Tiger or Hero any less artistic than ballet or modern dance?
I mean, stunts, obviously, they need it. I mean, just watch John Wick 2. Like, that would be the winner this year.
So I'm very torn because I see exactly what they mean, right? I agree with all of their points, but I have one reservation, and that's that even though technically maybe, like, the movie You've Got Mail had a stunt when someone pretended to trip.
When Tom Hanks blew his ACL out.
But I mean, the awards need – with the exception of like best animated feature, which I hear a lot of argument that they want to get rid of and make it just, you know, compete with best feature. Like, stunts aren't in all films. So do you make it – like it's going to be targeting action movies, right? Like, is that okay?
They do a technical ceremony before the Oscars.
What?
Yeah.
You do. Whoa, hold on. Are we talking like some stonecutters meeting that I've never heard of?
No, it's like a smaller pre-Oscars thing with other type things. So I've talked about this a lot, but I've worked on a lot of film sets, man, and watching some of these guys like on Civil War and. I'm not going to name drop anymore. It sounds terrible. But watching like all these stunt, I think it's an art, man. And so I think if they could have technical categories, I mean, not every film has best visual effects, and they still do that.
And so if we were to go that route, and I would love to see this category exist. I was just kind of playing devil's advocate with arguments people would make against it. And that argument, though, would really apply just as equally, though, to Best Animated Feature, which clearly exists. So if we did Best Stunts, would it really be Best Stunts in general, and or would Best Fight Choreography get to be its own thing versus Action Sequence Execution?
Oh, shit.
Now, I'm not trying to throw a wrench in this. I'm just saying, okay, like, because a great stunt is what is like a thing, or a sequence, or combat choreography. They go into their own separate realms.
But well, I guess think about The Raid, right? So about a billion people got killed in that movie, literally.
Like a billion.
So they had choreography, but they also had many stunts during those fights.
But like it's hard for me to put that in a category with Mad Max Fury Road. Like, how do I weigh them?
I mean, how do they even weigh Best Actor and Best Actress? I feel like it's all just like it's all arbitrary anyway. But
you weigh them in acting units.
I mean, every single category though, everyone's just like, yeah, I don't even know how they do it.
Wait, it's just what you like more for whatever reason. Yeah, it's totally.
He's playing a person in real. He's it fully inhabited Winston Churchill, Oscar. Like it's Meryl Streep eating ice cream, Oscar. Right? So, I mean, it's all arbitrary. Like, everyone's going to argue about it. Like, and for us, if you and I sat there, if they put you and I in a lab, right, and you and I, like, wore white coats and watched a lot of movies and, you know, drank Old Rasputin Stout.
I want this job, by the way. Anyone listening who's hiring for this, Mark and I are in the market.
And we came up with, like, you know, the perfect way to nominate stunt / choreography in film. I guarantee people watch and be like, that's dumb.
You know, it's totally fair to come around to the insane subjectivity of picking our favorites in these things. Because, like, I remember hearing a lot of discussion about Will Smith in Concussion. And some people were saying, oh my gosh, Will Smith did such a great job, this, that, and the other. And then other people criticized him specifically because, well, they said, well, he just had a Nigerian accent and not necessarily did he try to sound like the particular doctor he was playing. And then – and so it's like all of a sudden we just have two very unrelated critiques or reactions to him in that role.
I mean, if you look at like Florida, there's some different accents if you go north, central. So it's like, yeah, I have a Floridian accent. Well, where in Florida? Like, so I mean like Nigerian, it's like, yeah, it's Nigerian. Where?
Right. But they're saying he was playing a particular guy, and they're saying that he made no effort to sound like that particular guy. That's what. Whereas, like Johnny Depp, when he plays an historic character, he tries to emulate that character's speech patterns. Like that's what they're saying. And whereas, and other people are like, well, he acted the crap out of that role, though. Like he did great in that movie. I don't know. That's what I mean, though. You see what I mean? Like I loved that movie. I thought he kicked the crap out of it. I thought he was awesome.
No one's ever going to agree on any of this stuff, dude. It's just awards handed out to rich people. The only reason I love the Academy Awards is because I love trying to predict it. Like, that's
episode
my thing.
Episode 107, Mark tells it like it is. Cold and hard.
You know, let me tell you.
Cover your kids' ears. We're ruining the Oscars.
Aliens are real.
Sigourney Weaver was in a documentary that got out of hand. So that would be horrible, those four people.
Yeah, so it's just, I don't know, man. It's just, and then with the whole, all right, so this is going to sound bad. So mocap, and I'm a huge Andy Serkis fan, I just haven't really liked any of the Planet of the Apes movies. I understand their technical wizardry, and I love that Matt Reeves in the second and third one went to, you know, on location, to really rugged locations, to make his beautiful CGI creations look amazing. I mean, you have apes riding horses going through waterfalls. I mean, it's arduous to make those films, and I think everything is to be commended. But I was reading A.O. Scott from the New York Times was talking about, like, if Andy Serkis should be nominated for an Oscar. And he wrote, Andy Serkis's portrayal of Caesar is a role that continues to redefine screen acting in the digital age. His facial expressions and body language are so evocatively and precisely rendered that it is impossible to say where his art ends and as exquisite artifice of Weta Digital, the special effects company, begins. So it's like, it's an amazing performance, but you're like, how much is digital? But I don't know. That, like, so, you know, you see these performances and you're like, I mean, I think he was better as Gollum than...
Oh, yeah.
He was better as Gollum than he was, or Smeagol, than he was as Caesar. And so for me, that was more of a performance that, if maybe, I don't know if I'm a Lord of the Rings nerd, but if that got nominated, I'd be like, yes. But if Caesar got nominated, I'm like, can someone just give him, like, a hug?
Well, you know, so when you just said what you said if Lord of the Rings got nominated for that, you'd say yes. And I felt it. Like, the moment you said, I'm like, yes. And then you commented on Planet of the Apes. And you know what? I'd find myself thinking this. It's not a yes or no. I'd think, well, crap, now I got to watch that and just try and drone everything out and look at him. But in Lord of the Rings, I don't have to do that, right? Because he popped. Whereas in Planet of the Apes, I feel like I was just busy being taken away by the amazing CGI. I didn't get wrapped up in the character, just some movements. But maybe that links to the stunt aspect of the question. Even though he's not performing physical feats, he's doing physical acting that is informed by CGI. Oh gosh, I'm totally trying to over-rationalize this.
I mean, he is a master at mocap acting. I mean, he could literally write the book on it. I keep saying literally a lot. Son of a bitch. I'm going to start calling people, hey, what's up, jerks? So I think it's – I don't know. Who am I? I'm just some dude podcasting. But I don't think it's there yet. I don't think if Bill Murray can't get nominated for Kingpin, if Melissa McCarthy isn't nominated for Bridesmaids for an Oscar, like, I don't see how – mocap is going to get nominated, and I just don't see it happening.
Well, you know what else? If it doesn't happen, he's not going to get any fewer jobs. He seems to be cornering that industry, so.
Yeah, and you know, he's directing now. He directed a movie called Breathe, and he's really stepping out. I mean, he's made a really brilliant career out of it, and so, I mean, I'm not saying that's enough, but I don't think Caesar from that should be nominated as an Academy Award. I mean, is further down the line? Maybe, yeah. I mean, shoot. It could happen. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis decides to play Smeagol in a Sleepless in Mordor, and he plays Smeagol in Love, and he goes full Smeagol for the entire 6-month shoot.
And he starts yelling at people at the craft services.
Yeah. Oh no, he goes fishing.
Smeagol.
He's fishing. He's like in the lakes hitting trout with rocks. Then I can
actually in a lake outside off of the set.
Yeah. And like, everyone's like, shit, we got to get him back in the mocap suit.
Well, those were actually two more deeply founded listener questions, I think, that we've had from Filmphonic there.
Give us something more stupid next time, Filmphonic.
Yeah, well, they're going to be keeping it real a little bit later because they have our third question too.
We don't want people to know that we answer questions.
I know that we're doing way too much question answering for a change.
Yeah, a third one, I'm just going to be like, no.
No. Six. Brown. False.
Wait, I was going to try to put a movie together on that. Wait, 007, because Dr. No, but then that's 007.
No, six. Brown. False.
Yep, no. You're right.
Six pound falls.
All right, so you wanna get into the topic here?
I thought we were just gonna talk about listener questions.
But you and I were just gonna bro out.
That's right. We're just gonna answer all of Filmphonic's curiosities about the film realm with our mania.
He's breaking our record for answering questions. So since we're back, you know, and I think a lot of our podcasts, we've talked about, you know, JCVD. We've done a lot of fighting, kind of not fighting, but we've put together the Magnificent Seven squads, and I think we've kind of had fun on that. But I don't think we've done like the biggest badasses of a certain year. So I had you do three, I did three, the biggest badasses of 2017.
I got to give a real spoiler alert, by the way. I did not pick Dwayne Johnson, Zac Efron, and Ryan Reynolds.
I was so happy.
I did not pick any of them, let alone all three. I'll bet a lot of people might have wondered about that.
There's Baywatch.
Well, Baywatch for potentially both of them, but also The Rock like guides a missile with his arm in Fate of the Furious.
Oh yeah.
But Ryan Reynolds didn't have a good badass year. He did not have a good badass year, though. He got eaten out from the inside by an alien. Well, that was basically his year.
Like a flying flower, that little alien. Like a...
And then he twitched. Yeah. Like, you know, after he was dead, because the alien's still in there, just macabre.
He was popping and locking.
That was rough. I thought, like, that really ate at my soul. Poor Ryan.
So before we get into it, I just want to drop some runner-ups. And I want to say love Sylvia Hooks from Blade Runner 49. She is, if you haven't watched it, she's Jared Leto's right-hand woman. And she is just an absolute badass. There's a scene with Robin Wright that still haunts my dreams. And then there's Lorraine, Charlize Theron from Atomic Blonde. I wanted to have her in here, but there's someone else that's in a similar kind of role that I like their performances the same, but I picked the movie I liked more. So, and then my last one is Jeremy Renner, who plays Corey in Wind River. I really wanted him in here, and we had discussed it, but I just think to discuss his badassness kind of primes you for something that you shouldn't be primed for. So I didn't see it coming. So I don't want people, you know, when people are like, hey, man, that was a great twist in that movie. And you're like, oh, great.
Now I'm going to be on my toes for some shit.
Yeah, it's sweet. So if this was like a year later and we were talking about like our favorite people, 2 years, and we're talking about our favorite, you know, tough people from the last 2 years, I definitely wouldn't put him in here. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at. So do you want to – what's up?
I got to add to your Atomic Blonde, and that's just that, like I said earlier, I've had a really just hectic year. This is the first year since I moved back to, you know, Florida, and I'm starting my job over here in Florida. And so I haven't been watching nearly as many movies as normal. I mean, I still watch an irregular amount of movies, but it's way low for my theatrical attendance. And just based on the trailer, I really wanted to do Charlize Theron. Yeah. But because I didn't see it, I still haven't seen it, so I didn't pick her.
Yeah, she deserves it, but there's just a movie that I love. And you know what? Let's kick it off. What? So I guess the guy that beat her out of the tough guy spot on the movie films and flicks list is Vince Vaughn in Brawl and Cell Block 99.
Which I clearly need to see.
Yeah, and S. Craig Zahler is the director-writer, and he also made Bone Tomahawk, which we at MFF love.
Ugh.
And what I love most about this movie is, you know, Vince Vaughn's 6'5", and he's a big dude, and he used to box, and he used to wrestle. And in this film, I think you and I have talked about this. Like, I could count just off the top of my head a few people that I've just, like, believed in the last 20 years that could just take people out. So in my head, I'm thinking Benicio del Toro from Sicario. I'm thinking Russell Crowe from Gladiator. Like, mm-hmm. You know, any actor can learn choreography and beat up 30 people, but then there's other people that I'm all in. Like Iko Uwe from The Raid. I just think there are certain people that when I'm watching them, I'm like, I believe it. I am with this right now. And so Brawl in Cell Block 99 is about this, I guess, drug dealer who goes on this pickup. It goes wrong. He actually goes after two guys who are shooting. Like, so he's with two other guys that are untrustworthy. Cops come. And he actually takes out the two guys so no cops get hurt. And he gets placed in this minimum security prison. It seems like actually really nice there. But the guys that he thwarted kidnap his pregnant wife. And they're like, mm-hmm. We're going to mutilate her. Like, we know a way to go inside and cut a baby's arms off. Really gruesome. Like, you have to go to this horrible prison and you have to kill somebody. So Vince Vaughn has to he basically has to fight his way to get put in solitary and brawl in Cell Block 99 to kill this guy. And I mean, there's some things that are very out there, but just, you know, he's not the fastest dude, but the form he uses and just the way Vince Vaughn, like, I don't know, you like him, and the dude has heart, and I haven't seen a character on screen like this. And so during these really long fight scenes, I was just so impressed with the choreography and the director. He's like, we feature the faces of the performers, so you know they're really fighting. I don't think anyone in the world is walking out of this movie thinking, oh, that was Vince Vaughn's stunt double. It's not. It's him doing every single bit of that fighting, and I'm showing it in a way that you can clearly see it's him. His physicality, the way he moves, all of that is on display all the time, and you walk away feeling like you've seen a real fight, if it's working for you in the right way. And then he was like, you know, he had a boxing background. He has a good idea on how to weaponize himself and handle other human beings. So you're just watching him beat up these people, and you're like, I get it. And the punches hit hard. I mean, it's really cool. So
I got a question. Does this feel more like the way Charlize Theron is hitting in Atomic Blonde, where it's exhausting and she's putting her all in it, like that kind? Or is it like the bathhouse fight scene in Eastern Promises? Is it that kind of grueling?
They're not either. Because you know, Charlize Theron, like her, I think you saw from the trailer, like the way she hit these guys a lot.
Oh, she like wound up too.
And that's good though. Like the way they handle those fight scenes were brilliant because they didn't waste a punch. I think everything they try to keep as real as possible. In Eastern Promises, that was more of like a primal crawl, slip, kind of fight. Like Viggo Mortensen is tough, but he was also unawares and he had no shoes and he was naked and he was in a slippery bathhouse. This one, it's Vince Vaughn with shoes on, 6'5", as a former boxer hitting people. I mean, when a 6'5", 230-pound man who knows how to hit hits you, you know, there's going to be a lot less punches.
It's gonna rattle your kibble.
Like it's not like The Rock and Vin Diesel in Fast Five. Like he's roughing these people up, and so it's fighting like I haven't seen. It's more like Old Boy fighting almost, just not as comical. But that hallway fight, like, no, it's not like that. You gotta see it. Like he's just a straight up badass. So
can I just also ask a question? So when I saw the trailer for this, right, and I only saw it like once. It's not like I thought about this a lot before I asked this question, but I almost thought I was seeing a trailer about someone who, I don't know, might have been a white supremacist. And I didn't necessarily just because, you know, the tattoo on the back of the head and shaved head. I didn't know what I was getting. The trailer to me did not properly convey to me the kind of movie that you're describing. And so, like, what would you tell people who maybe skip this movie? Well, I didn't skip it on purpose. I just didn't get to it. But if people skip the movie based on the trailer, what would you say about how the trailer represented this movie versus what you saw? Because you also said – you mentioned a lot of heart. Yeah. I would not have inferred that at all from the trailer.
So a non-white supremacist – has to protect his wife and unborn child by fighting his way through the prison system to kill somebody. And he knows where it's going to get him, but he doesn't want anything to happen to his, you know, wife and child, his koala. It's
his koala?
It's adorable, man. That's no one ever thought I'd say that about Brawl and Subback 99. But that's the synopsis of it, so. Who's your pick?
Well, I hate saying it 89 times. I didn't see a lot of movies, so a lot of mine are kind of like the fluff piece picks, but I hope I'm picking relatively stylish ones. My first one is probably on 80 other people's lists. It's Jason Momoa as Aquaman. I mean, from Justice League. That guy, he basically plays a plus-size skater dude who doesn't want to get into any fight that he doesn't have to. And specifically, when you go up to him and you're like, we need to save the world and form an alliance, he's like, no, that's not my thing. I'm here to watch out for this little fishing town because no one else will watch out for them. It's almost like, it's like, yo, baddie, you and a whole bunch of other people are already watching out for the rest of the world. I'm watching out for the people that no one will watch out for. So like, he's the tough guy who stands up for people. But he's fighting he's like the antithesis of even our Batman anti-hero, who is trying to protect the great. And Aquaman, you know, Arthur Curry, he's trying to protect the few who are ignored, the few who get overlooked. And I think that's neat. And then he's teasing Batman at the same time when he finally does join, you know, all that stuff with like, oh yeah, just like a bat. Dig it. Like, I saw that stuff in the trailer and I'm thinking, that's not going to work. And then I saw it in the movie and I'm like, that kind of worked.
What's his power?
Aquaman? Yeah. Well, you mean in the comic books, I'm not going to, I don't really know. In this, he can basically swim really fast. He's apparently incredibly strong. And yeah.
Because I was like, wait, there's no
water. He can control the water?
I was like, there's no water in this final battle scene, but the dude's like flying.
Well, you know, that's kind of what I would call the Age of Ultron phenomenon, and it's in a lot of other multi-hero movies, but it showed to me the most in Age of Ultron when they're all defending that thing at the end, and everybody from Black Widow to the most powerful heroes to Hawkeye are all dispatching bad guys at the same exact pace. Like, they're equally easy to defeat. I feel like this movie homogenized the power of our heroes. It took Wonder Woman up a little. She was already quite a toughie. They just decided that Aquaman could throw things and jump and hurl things like Superman almost. Maybe it felt homogenized.
Maybe he can deal with the pressures of the ocean, so he can jump around better.
So he's like dense and super tough and strong like Superman as a result?
Sure.
Kind of thing. I mean, like, okay, yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like he breathed life into it. I like Momoa, man. The dude, in this one, like, I like that he's just down to drink whiskey in a fishing town, but when, like, shit gets real, he's like, all right. Like, he gets it.
You know something I do really like about the casting of these guys? And it may or may not correspond to the comic books, but I really like that, like, when we first meet Batman and see him next to Superman, it is indeed the reality that, like, Batman is bigger than Superman, these actors they cast and their physiques. And then you have Momoa, and I like that he is bigger than Batman. So it's almost like their roles or importance have been almost reversed in terms of physical size. They're not making it that the biggest guy is the toughest. And I kind of like that. I don't know if that's on purpose, but I like that the biggest guy isn't the toughest.
Batman?
Right, yeah, I mean, Affleck in that, he might actually weigh the same or more than Momoa, who's taller than him.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then you throw the suit on him, it makes him look even yet bigger. And they usually film Batman in the foreground to show his bulk, even though when they're side by side, you see that Momoa happens to be taller. Like, Batman looks righteously huge.
That suit at the end, though, didn't look like he could move in that suit at the end.
Dude, I don't know how he moves in any of these things.
No, and I thought I'm a big Momoa fan. He definitely breathed life. I can't wait for his standalone because James Wan's directing it.
I hope that they let him retain the flavor that he breathed into the character for Justice League.
Because they're already done with it, though. That's a problem, I think.
Well, I hope. Oh shit. That's tough to say, because that means that Juan didn't see a finished version, at least, of this before doing that. That's tough.
I mean,
so we might be seeing kind of two different Aquamans played by the same guy.
I like it.
It's interesting. But I love what Juan does with, like, pretty much everything.
He's good with actors, too, I believe. That wasn't a question. Or, like, I believe. No, I believe it.
He's good with everything. I think Juan has. I haven't been a super cheerleader of everything he does necessarily, but I appreciate all of his efforts, even if I disagree. But usually the things that I don't like, you end up loving. So between the two of us, I think we love everything he's ever touched.
But between us loving 50% of his. Wait, I'm more of like. I love like 80% of his stuff, and do you dislike about 20%?
Maybe. Well, like some of the stuff that he's been involved with production wise, I don't know.
First Annabelle.
Nah. Okay, maybe between the two of us, we don't love all his work because that first Annabelle hurt.
All right, so how about this? Let's take our first break. And so we're going to have ads in here soon. John, you're going to put the ads in.
I hope you all are bracing yourselves for a break with a few very brief ads.
So if you're listening to this the day it comes out, the ads might not be in here. So if you're hearing like, hey, we're going to break, here's the ads. And then you go, hello, welcome back. Just deal with it.
Just assume that your superhero power is skipping ads.
But if not, if you hear a delicious Blog Talk Radio sponsored ad, enjoy. And we're back. I really hope you enjoyed whatever ad or lack of ad that was there, and I hope that you are looking at your computer right now or your phone and buying whatever nice product that Blog Talk Radio is pushing. And so I hope it's something you need. I hope it's not something that you want. And I hope you can buy it and be able to share, you know, your bank receipt with, if you have a significant other, and not have to hide it and be like, hey, I bought this. I didn't do it behind your back. And then your significant other's like, hey, I get it. You know?
I understand that impulse buy.
Like, I get it. You know? Like, we need it. We needed a...
I'll tell you, what people really need is homemade apple pie cider from Cigar City Brewing in Tampa, Florida. If you're listening, Cigar City, I'm drinking your cider right now, and you should probably sponsor us.
We need Cigar City to sponsor us.
I'm keeping it local here, Cigar City.
High
this
Line,
is fantastic.
Florida Cracker, Marshall Zukov, Hunapoo.
They're pretty. I'm telling. Oh yeah, that's in March. Tampa their release. Lager. Listen, I got to get there for the release.
All right, Cigar City beer. It's delicious.
We know you're listening, Cigar City.
Yeah, they put a tap on me.
We know they're listening to us on our. They probably subscribe, so you should just start sending us a case of beer, and we'll keep talking about it.
I hear the owner bought a new Maserati based on all the Cigar City beer that we've sold through the.
Just through this podcast.
Yeah.
From this single ad right now.
I mean, dollar signs are. Like, you know, in like Bugs Bunny when the dollar signs are racking up in his eyes? Like, that's what Cigar City is doing right now.
I feel like if in the 10th. Fast and Furious movie, if Vin Diesel moved to like Tampa, there's a good, you know, Cuban culture scene there. He could get down with Cigar City, even though they don't make Corona. I think just the name, he'd be willing to walk in front of it.
Yeah, you're right. He'd be doing the lager. He's not an IPA guy.
Yeah,
Vin Diesel like that. Vin Diesel's like, how do you spell IPA?
And The Rock would be drinking the Hunapoo.
No, he'd just be drinking sweat.
That sounds horrible. Why would he do that?
The Rock doesn't drink alcohol.
Actually, that might be true.
Just give me 40 egg whites.
You don't get one of those, like, godly physiques by drinking a lot of beer.
Yeah, no. Yeah, he probably does vodka.
Keep the carbs down.
That's right. The Rock drinks a lot of vodka. All right. All right, so yeah, let's once again, the immortal words of John Lazareth. I think we have another question.
Then we do in fact. From Filmphonic once again, they ask, considering Disney's growing D23 and Star Wars celebration conferences and all their encompassing presence, do you think Marvel Studio and Lucasfilm days appearing at Comic-Con are numbered?
I think Lucasfilm, maybe, because they are building more towards D23. Marvel did have a huge presence in Hall H this year. But a lot of other studios have started pulling out of this, and there's piracy, there's, you know, leaks. So I think they're a little bit more hesitant about it. But I think, you know what, I think the days of just, all right, how about that? I think the days of just random studios going to Comic-Con because they're like, people like movies, is coming to an end. I think the days of really one big show per Comic-Con could happen.
What do you mean one big show per Comic-Con?
Like in Hall H this year, they previewed Thor, Ant-Man.
Okay.
Like, they brought in everybody. So
I gotcha.
I think the days of, like, a big show-stopping show on Saturday are still very – could happen. I think that could still happen.
I have a curiosity. You might understand the answer to this. Now that all Star Wars is – it's all Star Wars is owned by Disney, right? Like, so they own the they own all of it. Right? Am I getting that? Okay. So does that mean now that Ray Park can't just decide to show up at a random convention dressed as Darth Maul unless he has their blessing?
I don't think Ray Park cares. You met him at the shows.
That's fair. But like, in terms of like one's ability to do that, does he need permission to go to a convention now and have lithographs of himself as Darth Maul to sign? or can Disney control that?
Because remember WWE, when we were at Comic-Cons, the pictures had to be sent from WWE.
Right. I'm just wondering, like, does this hamstring people like Ray Park and Mayhew, who played Chewbacca, from liberally attending a lot of conventions if they want to, using that?
I think that's such small potatoes.
That they don't care? I hope so. I hope that they let them ride that wave, because the fans love them.
Because they've owned them for a few years now, and we'd have heard about that. Because I was working Comic-Cons last year with all these people. I never, you know, they were still doing it.
Okay.
Hey,
I hope that's cool.
Keep money in Park's pocket.
That's right. Keep money in Park's pocket.
No, I mean, listen, I think they're still happening. I think it depends on the year. I mean, DC didn't have a strong lineup because they're going through the reshoots this year. So I think if it appeals to Comic-Con fans, I mean, Game of Thrones, right? That's huge. If Game of Thrones does a Hall H panel on a Saturday, that's going to blow up. So I think if Marvel has something new to promote, I mean, listen, they debuted some footage at Comic-Con. No one was able to watch it until last week, but everyone was buzzing about it. I think you want that. I think – I don't know. So that's what I think. I think the days of the companies that should be there, they'll still come. But I think the smaller ones who are promoting smaller shows won't.
Like, Mark, you're answering more questions in this podcast than you have in the sum of our – history of podcasting.
You know what? Who are you, Filmphonic?
They're people who ask some good questions, what they
are. Filmphonic, are you my bully from like fifth grade?
Oh, no!
Are you bullying me with questions? Are you trying?
How dare you ask questions that I have answers?
Oh, Filmphonic. You know what, Filmphonic? I like you.
Good questions.
But I'm mad at you.
Good questions. We should specifically encourage Filmphonic to provide three questions for future podcasts that have no answer.
No, I don't want any questions from them.
No, you're banned.
You're grounded, Filmphonic.
Except for listening. Continue listening, though.
You and who's the man? Oh gosh, the really long question.
Dylan.
Sorry,
my buddy Dylan. My good friend Dylan. Dirtbag D.
Dirtbag D and Filmphonic.
Dirty D.
You guys. I like you. I like you. But I'm watching you.
I'm watching. I got my eye on you.
So Filmphonic makes me actually answer questions, and Dylan's questions are so long, once we get done with them, the podcast is over.
If we did both of their questions, that's the whole podcast.
Oh. All right, let's do it. Let's jump. All right. So I started. You want to start this round?
Sure. You know, I kind of have I'm going to bring these guys up as a pair, but I was thinking about like really tough loving fathers, and I was thinking of Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and his Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was like, I don't know if I'm going to call it a love letter to unconventional father-son relationships, but that was just all over that movie. And the one that, you know, was the most touching, I feel, was, yeah, you know, Yondu and
Mary and Poppins, y'all.
Star-Lord. Yeah, I mean, he said I think they went a little overboard, but still, all the messages I really appreciated. He was such like a, I mean, but he had that, but he was still tough.
He murdered about 300 people.
Yeah, with that, I mean, that arrow, I thought his arrow was abrupt and a little brutal in the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And in this one, yeah, did he kill like 40 people on that ship?
No, they killed hundreds of people.
Okay, I mean, it just, he was going through throats.
Sale murder.
Like, dude, it was like in The Raid, but it didn't feel like a hero doing it at the time.
And they loved it. They murdered a lot of people and they loved it.
But I mean, you have him, right? And he was just straight up being a badass in the quiet name of being an unconventional father. And then you had Michael Keaton as the Vulture, and you had brought up in our homecoming pod about just the sheer like stress that you felt as you were realizing that Vulture was figuring out that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is figuring out that, you know, his date's dad is Vulture. And again, just They're both these kind of regular guys in their universe who have found a lot of power somehow, either by a strange arrow that you whistle around that wholesale murders, or by Tony Stark tech and alien technology. It has made these regular guys into brutally powerful providers, I almost want to call them.
And accidental murderers, because he kills that one guy and he's like, oh, that was supposed to stun him.
Yeah. So, oops.
Yeah. And also, he's like, Michael Keaton's flying around like on really sort of untested weaponry. Like, that takes some guts.
He was all guts. I mean, he was living very comfortably, clearly. But he wasn't living like, I don't know. He wasn't living like one of these people who takes a private jet everywhere. He was living like someone who was a senior partner in his own law firm for 20 years.
The IRS is real, man.
Like, I think they're keeping him from driving around in a Rolls all the time. That's why he just has a Bentley.
Like, yeah, just yond you, man. Like, and at the end when everything's going down and there's tons of people, you know, this planet's doing all this stuff, like, Yondu was right there. Like, he, I don't know, I like that about him. Like, he was there to the bitter end. Like, I dig me some Yondu.
And Yondu, you know, his grimacing, he always felt like tough, like mean tough. Like, I've lived the toughest life ever tough.
Yeah.
Because even when he's getting frustrated kind of cutely to Baby Groot trying to get the fin, like, you see, he's just like, how do I have to deal with this?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of cheated, and I did too, but the nature of their roles felt, one made me think of the other, and I couldn't pick one. Well, so I cheated.
I'm going to jump over to Marvel again, or same, I'm going to use Marvel, and I'm going to use Valkyrie from Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, good pick. What drew you most to her? What made you think of her most for this?
Well, for me, all right, so this, I find it really, so this is the third Thor, and I find it really hard to introduce three-dimensional characters in film series that you already love the characters. You could go really wrong with this. Like, I think they also did a really good job with Black Panther and Spider-Man in Civil War. But what I liked most about her was, I mean, her introduction was, she opens up a ship, she falls down drunk, then she, like, pulls out some automatic guns, like, with her, I don't know, remote-controlled guns, blows a bunch of people away. I mean, Jeff Goldblum loves her. Like, there's that scene, I think one of my favorite scenes of the year, is like, she, like, kind of, like, slaps Goldblum's face, and he's like, but, I mean, if you think about it, she was the only person to survive, whatever, spoilers, Hela's attacks. Like, all the other Valkyries, she's a Valkyrie, you know she's a Valkyrie. Like, that's not much of a spoiler, but she survives all the attacks. And at the end, like, she's right, and she's jumping from space. Like, there's that scene where they're escaping from Jeff Goldblum's planet. I'm not even going to call him the Grandmaster. It's Jeff Goldblum. And she's jumping from ship to ship, wiping stuff out, and Thor's like, oh, I'm jealous. I need to do that. Like, she seems like the gung-ho one in this. And, I mean, she was the Valkyrie, and they needed her to help. And I don't know. I think a lot of times people introduce these characters who don't really have real additions or don't really help what happened, but I mean, I loved how, like, Valkyrie was just rolling and just, like, wiping people out on that bridge, and I don't know, I think it's a testament to Taika Waititi's direction, Tessa Thompson's acting, that you just get this character that's basically three-dimensional the moment you meet her. And also with her, like, Meg, my wife was like, I wish I could, like, have that role. She just gets to walk around being awesome and crushing people. Like, you could tell she enjoyed it. And, you know, this is going to sound bad, I don't want to bring up any names, but sometimes when actors or actresses have to play tough, they kind of come across as, like, smug. But, like, there's none of that in her performance. It was just kind of, like, joy, you know, like, you got the drunkenness. It was just fun. Like, I think she's going to be really great in future editions, and she's just powerful enough to, you know, she can wipe out a lot of dudes, you know, superhero guys.
So I was kind of left to wonder, because I totally agreed with your pick, and for me, the first thing that I thought of was one of my favorite moments of the whole movie, and it kind of, to me, informed me of some toughness that was never realized on screen. So Hulk is always talking to Thor, and, like, no matter, even after the fight, when Thor, no matter what Hulk thinks, Hulk knows that he didn't easily defeat him.
Yeah.
Like, he was getting pounded, especially at the end, a good bit. He was getting shocked by those hits. So it's not like Thor is a pushover, but he's still just like, oh, Thor is like smoldering flame, and I'm like raging. You know, it's always something that downplays him. When Valkyrie came to pick up Hulk for his training, first off, let's just appreciate that she is training him.
Yeah.
Somehow. And with the knowledge now that they have a history of training together, so they've fought or sparred this, that, and the other, she says to him, hey, big guy. He goes, hey, big girl.
Yeah.
Like, he views her, they chat like very friendly equals, whereas Thor, who gave him probably the ride of his life in that arena, he is still calling basically a wuss all the time. So what is she doing to Hulk in that training arena that we did not see?
I like
that. That's what I'm saying. She's like the toughest thing about her. It's like they didn't even maybe show us. And she, you know, and even then, and it's not like he didn't have his ego because she said, what's she up to? He goes, winning. Hey, big guy. Hey, big girl. It was the cutest moment of the movie, too, for me. That friendly humanity that they shared, that they clearly liked each other, and that clearly she was super tough.
Yep.
Like, that was awesome to me. That's the weird thing that stuck out for me. Like, that's what really won that character over in my heart.
Dude, I love it. Tessa Thompson crushed it. She was good in Westworld, too. Who's your... Oh, go for it.
I was specifically skeptical of her, by the way. When I saw her in the trailer, what little I saw in the clips and stuff, I was just like, is this one... It was like what you said, bring in a new character when you have a lot of three-dimensional characters that we already love. I was just like, I hope I don't see much of this throwaway character. And then I loved her.
Yep. And yeah, and like, her. You know, like comic book fans, they're really tough on new... Like, and you know, I think fan like shows that are like even TV shows, movies that have established audiences, it's really hard to introduce people like Mutt Lang from like Indiana Jones. I don't watch Bones, but I watch the show Vikings, and in the show Vikings, there's this character Lagertha, and she's awesome. But Catherine Winnick, the actress, was like brought into like Bones season 4 or something like that as like his new girlfriend, but everyone hated her so much because Bones and him should be together. So it's really hard to introduce people in the established thing, so whatever. All right, who's your third?
So my last pick, again, I feel overly mainstream, but whatever, shameless. Jason Statham is Deckard Shaw from Fate of the Furious, and I'm specifically thinking more than anything about what we called Uncle Statham in the plane when he's rescuing the baby, and he is... Talk about Yondu wholesale murdering. Jason Statham is wholesale murdering and then taking breaks to do, like, cooing at the baby. And then he goes and, like, is straight up stabbing bros in the throat and then punching his little throwing dagger deeper. And then it's cute. Hey, how's it going, little guy? Yep. I'm all smiles. Like, it's like you're a psychopath.
I have two thoughts about Statham in this. In Furious 7, right, he murders about 40 cops who are just doing their job.
He was a bad guy.
Like, legit, 40 cops who probably have families. He just murders them. And then in this one, he's like,
you know, I did some bad stuff. You know,
that's a good. Is that good for a Statham?
I did.
Sounds exactly like Statham.
And then The Rock is like, hey man, you were in the military, and Statham's like, wait, yeah.
It sounds like they're twins. They have very subtle differences in their voices.
And then The Rock shrugs his shoulders and goes, okay, you're one of us now. And I'm like, that dude murdered 40 cops. Like, no, no. But then there's also another thing. I was watching The Rock. I was like, who... do I think could beat up The Rock, could win in a fight over The Rock, and I would be like, cool. And Statham could. Like, when they were squaring off, I'm like, if Statham wins, I get it.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things. It's like the Well, I'm not trying to say what I really think is the matchup here, but it's like the Bruce Lee Mike Tyson thing. It's like, say what you want about Bruce Lee's
I'm talking about the movie characters. Like not right. even like no, no. in real life. Like I'm thinking like in the mythology of this film.
Right. But it's one of those things where it's like if The Rock landed a good right hook, if Hobbs landed a good right hook, which is granted a smoke signaled throw, right? But if he landed that, that would be the end, period. But he should never be able to land that because Jason Statham and Deckard Shaw are just the wiliest person. Yeah. Like, just a. And in real life, Jason Statham is just a stunting phenom.
He was a diver.
He was that too, and he was a hairless go-go dancer.
Yeah, he was. Well, type in Jason Statham music video dancing,
and it will haunt you.
But you know, you're right though. I think Universal was right because I think Hobbs and Statham are really good together. The Rock and Statham, so they want to do a spinoff, which I don't like. They should do a Furious 9, not a spinoff, but.
Furious 10.5.
Yeah, I feel like he added a lot to it. He's a good addition. I don't, and his ego worked. I mean, you have a lot of egos in this Furious movie, and he still pulled it off. And I love the scene with him and his brother just wiping people out on the airplane. I think that was one of the highlights for me. And I like the little hats he wears. And I like how he goes, "What?"
I will say I do agree with you about how it's like he was just so evil based on how they presented him in the previous movie that – and I was able to flick a switch and forgive it to enjoy the movie. Right. But yeah, it's like they literally just – they're like, hey, remember this – it's like saying, hey, remember how Skeletor was evil? In this movie, he and He-Man are just buds. They're just going to bro shake it and they're good. Now they're going to have a buddy cop movie. Like that doesn't work. But, you know, again, we just wanted this movie to be fun, so we did our best to just ignore it. And I think it worked, whatever. Especially with that redeeming Uncle Statham in the plane scene.
And for all the dumb data that I put together, this is like the Fast movie. I legit think if someone's like, listen, he killed 40 people, he can't be a good guy. I think this is one moment where you can just be like, shut up. And like you're like, just... It's Fast. Like, it's a Fast movie. Get over it.
I gotta wonder, like, the Hobbs character, if we were to look at the fictionalized movie history of the Hobbs character that led to him being charged to chase Vin Diesel's crew in Fast 5, mm-hmm. like, I imagine he killed a lot of people. They were all criminals, I'm sure. But, you know, I'm sure that he was just straight up murdering people on his warpath to get his big bads in his career.
Oh, they both murdered a lot. Got drunk one night and shared war stories, like, it would go for, like, a week.
They'd just be like, we should probably have the devil and the Grim Reaper here at this table sharing whiskey with us because we don't deserve to live another day.
Like, it's like Statham's like, I once ripped a guy's arms off and killed him with his arms. And then The Rock's like, I ripped a guy's legs off.
And I ripped out a guy's trachea and strangled him with it.
And everyone's like, we believe you.
But we like you, so it's cool.
Uncle Rock.
Who's your last fan? All
right, so... I originally had one, but I was like, these are kind of like a buddy deal after I did some sort of research on it. I thought about it. So I'm doing a buddy deal as well. I'm doing Darlene, Eliza Gonzalez, and Buddy, John Hamm from Baby Driver.
Okay. Yeah. I can see John Hamm when he makes his turn. That's what I think of when she dies.
But see, I was reading something interesting. Let's see. I was reading an interview from... John Hamm, and he's like, Eliza's character has one line that says he's talking about neck tattoos. That says it all about my character, too. He's one of those guys that's probably too old to have tattoos, too old to be dressed the way he does, but he has a very young girlfriend who has convinced him into making terrible choices. That's what John Hamm said. And so I love that scene with Jamie Foxx. There's one of my favorite scenes of the year, top three, is where Jamie Foxx is with Baby and Buddy and Darlene in a diner, and Jamie Foxx's character sort of calls out John Hamm. He's like, you were a banker, you were married, but then you met her, you guys got into drugs, and you like now you do crime to kind of like fuel your drug habit. like you said, wait, I do crime so I can buy drugs, right? And I do drugs to do crime. That's what someone said. But no, so I brought them in together because I thought that was their pair, and he was like the catalyst. But what I also can't shake the scene where she's like, listen, when John Hamm – or not John Hamm, when Buddy sees red, you see black. And what I liked about that scene is that wasn't her just being like, oh, my boyfriend could beat you up. She's actually telling the truth. Like later on when John Hamm got pissed and went on the rampage, like he was hardcore. Like he survived heat level gunfights. He was like, he became the big boss. He became just like this crazy badass. And what I liked the most about that scene is he calls him out for like being this banker, but then she's like, yo, don't do this. Like when he sees red, you see black. And when that happened, that's what actually happened. And it was just, that's why Baby Driver is my favorite movie of the year. It's just the layering of the dialogue along with the performances and the characters. And I don't know, at the end, just you could see how angry he was that Darlene was killed. You know, he was also on drugs. Didn't like that after one scene happens, he's like, why did you do that? He's just like, John Hamm running around with a gun, like I bought him. And I think that that's one of the best usages of John Hamm that I've ever seen.
I was really impressed. And I always liked him. I think I've liked him in everything I've ever seen him do. Ever. But at the same time, when I went and saw the trailer for this, I'm like, he looks really cool. I don't see myself buying this. Despite Mad Men, despite like all the other stuff he's done, I was still just thinking, I don't know if I see him being like that kind of hard. I see him being that kind of cool, you know, and renegade. And then, but like, yeah, like when he has some serious crazy eyes. Like he was nailing that like he did time.
Yeah. No, it's just, yeah, like, I don't know. I liked it. I liked though that he had this like hatred in his eyes towards the end. And I don't know. I liked that how she said it. So I don't know. I just, man, that just stuck with me. I was just like, this guy, this is awesome. And I was going to put Jamie Foxx, but he just wasn't too much of a badass as opposed to John Hamm. So
he was more of a troublemaker.
Like a Loki.
Yeah, he was just like, he was just a tougher sensibilitied Loki to me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just, I don't know, I liked it. I liked how one line in a diner scene of Darlene's monologue was true. I don't know. Like, it wasn't hyperbole. And so when that happened, I was like, wow, this is awesome. So, yeah, that's my the tough guys, the tough people of 2017.
See, it's like you were a lot better at picking what I will call the less mainstream picks. Valkyrie, maybe, but I think most people are gravitating towards their Thors and their Hulks and whatnot. Like, I was kind of like our mainstream pick representation, and you were the picks that people missed that they realize, oh right,
dude, movies, films, and flex, man, we got to keep it weird and little.
You made me do that when you said Valkyrie. That's what I did. I was like, holy shit, that should be one of my picks.
we got, you know, like there's so many podcasts out there, man, we want to be different.
That's right. Yeah. And by different we mean your favorite. That's scratch that. I don't care if we're your favorite as long as you acknowledge we're the best.
All right, I'm gonna go into my Michael Caine impersonation here, and no, I'm gonna request something from all our fans.
Okay, brace yourself.
Hi, all.
What is no? Hard reset. Hard reset.
Oi. No. She was only 15. Okay.
Oh no.
Hi, movies, films, and oh shit. Okay, how about this, guys?
He's actually trying, folks.
We're your number one podcast. Go to iTunes, rate, review, subscribe. Share our we probably have better episodes than others. Share those episodes.
That was arguably, by the way, your best Michael Caine impression that you just gave there.
She was only 15.
It's terrible. I just want to thank Filmphonic for their questions and taunting us to actually answer questions, Mark in particular. And, you know, we weren't releasing a lot of episodes lately in our slight hiatus, but, you know, maybe an episode a month for a while. And in that time, we were still getting a lot of support. So I just want to thank the Nerdy Bitches podcast. They've always had our backs. The Crash Palace with The Last Knock, they've always had our backs and thrown us some polite ads. And yeah, so thanks to them and Filmphonic.
You know, a lot of people are messaging like, hey, where's the podcast at? And I was just like, hey, new phone, who's this?
keeping it really warm there.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, to everyone who's listening, if you're a new listener, we love listener questions. Please reach out to us. You can find us at Movies Films Flicks with an X.
And at on John's Horror Corner.
Mm-hmm. Right? On Twitter, yep. MFF for Movies, Films, and Flicks Horror Corner, or you can write out John's Horror Corner. So we're both of those on Twitter if you want to find us. We got Facebook, Movies, Films, and Flicks. If ever you guys have a good listener question, please don't give us an answer. We want silly questions.
Yeah, man, what's the deal? Yeah.
Message us, Facebook us, do whatever to us, and most of all, share us. And thank you for listening to us.
All right, y'all. Until the next time, which will be much sooner than you know, we're going to be recording a lot. We're going to go back to our normal schedule, hopefully. Knock on wood. As long as I don't go back to my Zoolander ways. No, you gave such a great finale, and then I kind of jumped on it and just kind of kept it going.
Unconventional. That is our way.
I feel like we should just keep going for another 2 minutes and like do like the Lord of the Rings endings.
Hey, like that was the second of our 12 endings.
Yeah, so you know, thank you guys for listening.
Yeah. Thanks.
I don't have
any more, Mark. I ran out of all my goods.
You know, we appreciate you sticking with this episode. Feel free to support us.
I mean, in listening to our I think we're on goodbye number 7. Good, have a good night, folks.
If you guys got any listener questions, thanks for listening to the pod. Send the listener questions our way. We appreciate you.
You.
Uh-oh, he's starting to do the... John's starting to short circuit here. All right, y'all. Well, thank you very much for John Levingood and for myself, Mark Hoffmeyer. Thank y'all. All right, so thank you guys for listening, and it's been a great pod. And oh, shit. All right, hey, guys, thank you. Please rate, review, subscribe. I shouldn't have said that after all the endings. But see you next week. Thank you very much.